It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is up? Welcome to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I am your host, D-Bro, joined at the hip, as always, with my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. So I don't know if you've been living under a rock, but best ball season is back, baby. Underdog Fantasy is live. You need to head over to underdogfantasy.com, download the app, deposit. It is mock draft season right now. And if you want the best, the sharpest ADP in the business right now to be able to hone your skills, to sharpen your edge, that way you can crush your league mates, you need to head over to Underdog, download the app, get drafting today, because there is no better way than with some money online. So on today's show, we are going to refresh, dust them off, and polish these babies up. We are back with bold calls and the man of the hour that we had to get in here, the head chopper pilot himself, Ian Harditz. You can find all of his awesome work over at PFF. Follow him on Twitter at iHarditz. Ian, what is going on, dude?
Finally get talking to you. I've been a fan on Twitter for a long time, and 2 weeks away from opening night, it's a good time to put our neck out there for the bull calls we believe in. Was doing a bunch of rankings updates before this, and it's time. Let's get after it, man.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, whether it's you and I are like trading pictures back and forth of the swaggiest players in the NFL, I mean, this felt like a very, very natural fit to get you on here and spit some fire. Adam, are you ready to roll?
Yeah, man. I'm in a good mood. I mean, we got football starting, and we have pretty much round two of the bold calls, and then I have the CBS Sports Analyst IDP League draft in about a half hour. I'm going to be repping FTN, and I have the first overall pick, so really I don't have to worry about anything till round two. So I'm chilling right now.
So you're taking Saquon number one, right?
No, that'd be Marvin Jones.
Dear God, man. All right. Well, without further ado, let's kick this off. Ian, start us off, man. What is your first fire take here?
Mr. Joe Burrow, a.k.a. maybe the best college quarterback season that we've ever seen, 2019. He's going to finish as a top 12 fantasy QB. And look, since 2010, we've only seen six guys do that. Cam Newton, Andrew Luck, RG3, Dak Prescott, Russ Wilson, and last year, Kyler Murray. And you look at that group, and you see two key similarities, I think, in my mind. One, all those guys were a week one starter start the year. We know that's the case with Burrow. And two, they all averaged at least 25 rushing yards per game in college. I mean, okay, obviously there's a difference between Cam and Kyler versus, Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson, but all those guys averaged at least 25 rushing yards per game in college. Burrow is at 27 rushing yards per game at LSU. And we know in college, sacks count against your rushing yards, so it's very hard to get that point. We have a rushing floor that's incredibly important in fantasy land, particularly at the QB position. And, moving on, okay, who's he going to be throwing the ball to? It's looking good. AJ Green is back running routes on the field. We'll see if he returns to his past future Hall of Famer form, but at a minimum, he'll be out there. Tyler Boyd, John Ross, my guy Auden Tate, T. Higgins, Joe Mixon, Giovanni Bernard. I mean, there's places to throw the ball to all over the field, and this is one of nine offenses from last season that threw the ball at least 600 times. So, 500 times. So we have a bunch of opportunity for Burrow to sling that ball around. Give me the rushing floor. I mean, the offensive line, okay, it's a massive issue, even getting Jonah Williams back, but I think the volume's there, the talent's there. It's a rough start to the season. I wish he wasn't playing in the AFC North, but, in drafts, I've been getting Burrow. I've just been drafting Tyrod Taylor, last round of the draft. There's your spot starter for the first month of the season.
Anybody that has subscribed to this podcast and listened to any episode previously knows I'm in lockstep with you, man. I love Joe Burrow this year. I think he's going to smash. For all of the reasons that you stated, Cincinnati is going to run a ton of plays this year. They're going to pass the ball a ton. I love Burrow. And I understand we're all inside. We have nothing better to do than stare at schedules and things of that nature. Can we agree that like the schedule analysis this year has gone a little bit overboard? I mean, good gosh. Like, we don't even know what the season is going to look like. Players missing times. Some of these defenses, you have one cornerback, a defensive lineman is out for that week. It changes the like the entire complexion of a defense. So for everybody that wants to come at me and say, but he's going to play the Ravens, he's going to play the Steelers, and he's going to play all these great defenses. Dude, we have no clue what that's going to look like. So I'm going to fade all this schedule analysis right now that is in Twitter, that we're talking about in fantasy. I'm not with him, man. Give me plays, give me passing, give me volume, and Burrow is going to get all of those this year.
Yeah, I agree, by the way, D-Burrow. Like, I've hardly even looked at schedules, and like you mentioned, you know.
I don't care, man.
No, I don't
either. Outside of bye weeks, don't care.
Like, if you're going to do it, make sure you do it, you know, month by month. Like, I've looked at weeks 1 through 4, but anyone saying, you know, so-and-so has the best running back schedule all season.
Yeah.
Like you said, man, it's going to completely, you know, be upside
like
down
I always,
after a month or two.
I always use the Bears from last year as an example, because once they lost Akeem Hicks, they were legitimately a run defense we targeted running backs against for a stretch of that season. So, like, yeah, like one defensive lineman, you know, one, you know, you're missing, you know, a high-end safety, all of a sudden tight ends are producing against that team. Like, it's just, I just play it by ear, but, like, you know, once we have, you know, sample sizes of players and teams during the season, then you can say, like, I look at schedule mainly for, like, you know, buy low opportunities on players, and, oh, this guy, you know, he has, you know, really good matchups down the stretch, and I use it, if anything, as, like, a tiebreaker. But yeah, I agree, Joe Burrow is, like, super enticing, dude's really good at football, and, like, it may be talked about more than I realize, but from top to bottom, Cincinnati's, you know, group of offensive weapons are got to be among the league's best, just, you know, all around. I mean, Ian mentioned Auden Tate, who's like maybe their fourth receiver right now, and he's really, really talented, not to mention T. Higgins. So, yeah, they're loaded.
Talking about the Bengals training camp MVP, Auden Tate. And all the haters want to talk about his lack of separation skills, but I don't know, man. When I back in my day, when I grew up, contested catches were, you know, a pretty cool thing to be able to do. So, I mean, it is funny. He'll be their wide receiver 4. I mean, I did an article looking at the pecking order of every team's passing game, and I mean, I don't think Auden Tate finishes top 5 in targets on the Bengals if everyone stays healthy. Will they stay healthy? Probably not with, you know, that room. But I mean, look, it does. It's a testament to the type of bodies that, you know, the Bengals went 2-14, 1-15 last year. It's certainly much more talent than you would expect a team, you know, that was just that bad last year to have coming back.
I'm going to stay in Houston because why not? That's all we do on this podcast is stay in Houston, D-Bro. So for the first episode of the Bold Calls, I talked about Robert Woods, so I couldn't talk about him again. So I'm going to Brandon Cooks. I think Brandon Cooks is going to stay healthy and be a top 15 receiver. I've talked about how his splits, and you can look at the splits on the FTN website, the splits app, indoors since 2015 are really, really enticing. I mean, since 2015... indoors, he's averaging nearly a half a receiving touchdown a game. It's up from .33. Outdoors, his receiving yards per game indoors, 75 per game compared to 64.8 outdoors. Receptions are up. Targets are up. Fantasy points per game are up by nearly 3 per game. Obviously, he played with Drew Brees and the Saints for a lot of that. But, I mean, this is still, you know, really, really explosive, talented player who, when healthy, you know, minus last year was the only year he really wasn't really, really productive. I mean, he's been a high-end wide receiver too for the most part. He's being drafted, you know, outside wide receiver 3 range at times, and he's playing with another great quarterback, because that's all he plays with is great quarterbacks, and you can throw Jared Goff in there as a good quarterback if you want, but he's obviously not great. But yeah, I just think it's a good fit with Deshaun Watson. They're gonna be an aggressive deep ball offense. Deeper, you've talked about that a lot. And like, Will Fuller, I mean, if Will Fuller's the one that gets hurt and Brandon Cooks stays healthy, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Brandon Cooks was like a top 12 receiver, given DeAndre Hopkins' 30% target share being gone, the fact that I think the secondary is going to be bad, and they'll be throwing a fair amount. I love Brandon Cooks. I've been drafting Brandon Cooks, Marvin Jones in that eighth round range pretty much in every draft. So I think Brandon Cooks stays healthy. The concussions aren't going to be an issue this year, and he's going to be a top 15 receiver.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're one of those people that think Will Fuller and Cooks are going to get hurt, that should lead you to Mr. $18 million guaranteed Randall Cobb. I mean, all these Houston receivers have been priced near their floor almost the entire offseason. I mean, if Cooks plays 16 games, he's not going to be the wide receiver, you know, 35, wherever he's being drafted right now. It's a little bit concerning when you look at, you know, the history of wide receivers being traded in the offseason, how they do in their first season on their new team. I mean, since 2010, only Brandon Marshall, and he did it twice, was traded in the offseason, turned around, and was that wide receiver one. So for someone like DeAndre Hopkins, maybe I'm a little more concerned about drafting him to be a wide receiver one when that's the cost. But we got Deshaun Watson there. We know he's going to be passing yards. We've seen Cooks do this in new environments before, and it's not even costing you much to take that chance. So Cooks, Fuller, and Cobb, man, give me all these. Give me everyone involved with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I'm all in. I mean, we've talked about the Texans tons on this podcast because there's just so many different – I feel like Ian was talking about, all of these guys are priced near their floor. Somebody is going to smash here, so I love you doubling down on the Texans offense. I'm heading over to the AFC West. I think the Los Angeles Chargers could have two running backs finish inside the top 24 this year. And I know people, obviously Austin Eckler is the call. Yes, yes, I understand. He's going to be an RB1. But who's going to be the second guy? And people want to talk about, can Tyrod be a good enough quarterback for this offense to function? Are they going to be too slow? Dude, I'm all in on the Chargers backfield and taking that second running back and those shots. I personally think, with all of the buzz coming out of camp, I think Joshua Kelly is the guy that you need to target. I understand Justin Jackson has been hashtag good over his career. They went out, they paid for Kelly. You look at how Eckler was used even after Melvin Gordon came back. This running back room supported two top 20 running backs last year after Gordon came back. All right, Eckler was the RB10 in fantasy points per game in PPR setting. You look at Gordon, we've already seen it. He was the RB17 in PPR points per game. And I understand that check down Phillip Rivers is still not there. Last time Tyrod was a starting quarterback for under Anthony Lynn, they were 12th in plays per game. Tyrod is still going to check the ball down for Eckler to sit here and be relevant. And Kelly can have the goal line role to make this happen. Because after Gordon came back, you saw Eckler. He had 7 touches or rushing attempts inside the 5 last year. Only 5 of those came after Gordon came back, and Gordon swallowed up the rest at 13. So I'm not saying that Joshua Kelly has to be Melvin Gordon for this to happen, but there is going to be rushing equity, touchdown equity in this offense because I think it's going to surprise some people. And yes, last year, or at least the last time Tyrod was the starting quarterback under Anthony Lynn, they were first, tip-top in the NFL in rushing once they got inside the red zone. I think a lot of the touchdowns are going to go to these running backs, so I'm all in right now. But I don't know if y'all guys think I'm crazy with all of that or not.
I think it's a fair spot to, I mean, throw a dart at. I don't know how it's going to shake out between Kelly and Justin Jackson. I mean, I've been hearing some good things out of Kelly, out of camp. But, you know, if one of those guys gets the Melvin Gordon role, great. I'm just not really all that convinced that's going to happen. I mean, as much as Eckler's snaps got cut once Gordon returned, I mean, the games we've seen Eckler without Gordon, he's been, you know, just the all-out kind of featured workhorse. And just kind of comes down to opportunity. Honestly, I'd be surprised if either Jackson or Kelly are able to kind of average more than 10 rush attempts per game. Maybe they can make it super efficient. I mean, one cool stat I found this offseason was looking at the top offenses and yards before contact per rush over the past half decade. And you had the 2019 Ravens with Lamar, 2019 Cardinals with Kyler, and you had the 2015 and 16 Bills with Tyrod all ranking towards the top of that. So truly, I mean, having that dual threat quarterback under center, as much of a negative as that could be for the receiving ability of these guys, I think the rushing game and the efficiency all the way around, which was already pretty high with Jackson and Eckler, I think even has another step to grow. So, man, if we can get some clarity, you know, if week one comes around and maybe Jackson's just barely even touching the field and it's the Eckler-Kelly show, I'm with you. Right now, though, I'm just kind of uncertain about what we're going to see from that early down spot. All right, I want to talk about my guy, Adam Thielen, finishing as a top 6 PPR wide receiver. And let's go through all the reasons why people don't expect this to happen. Number one, injury concerns. And this is apparently a concern, even though Thielen never missed a game from 2014 to 2018. He was healthy enough to return in the playoffs last season. He went 7 catches, 129 yards against the Saints, 5 catches, 50 yards against the 49ers. Certainly looked, you know, more than capable of balling out despite the hamstring issue. Okay, and then we have no Stephon Diggs. That doesn't help the offense, and I get it. You know, not having that field stretcher it hurts. It's going to make things more difficult in the intermediate areas of the field. But, I mean, you just got to trust this immense volume over the efficiency in this scenario. I mean, it's similar, like, to the Austin Eckler situation we were just talking about. Like, yeah, not having Rivers there isn't ideal for Eckler's, you know, passing game efficiency. But you know what matters more? Melvin Gordon not being there. So Eckler now gets the majority of the backfield's touches. So I think it's also similar to kind of what we saw from Zach Ertz, where in 2017, you know, offense was humming. They had field stretchers everywhere. 2018, 2019 wasn't the case. Life was harder. For his fantasy value, it still helped, though, because the guy was getting double the targets he had before. And that brings us to the next issue, that Stephon Diggs only had 94 targets last season. Now, let's look at Gary Kubiak's previous wide receiver ones that played at least 16 games. Demaryius Thomas had 144 and then 177 targets. Old man Steve Smith with the Ravens got 134 targets. Andre Johnson went for 181, 162, 171, 171, 163. I mean, it's okay if you don't think Thielen is quite as good as those guys, but just merely pointing to that 94 targets for Diggs, not even to mention how those 94 targets are some of the most fantasy-friendly ones in the league with all the deep ball looks. I mean, it's just lazy, and it's not even looking at Kubiak's kind of career and what he's been able to do for wide receiver ones. And finally, it's like, okay, even though he's not Andre Johnson, I think we're just forgetting how good Thielen is. This was the PPR wide receiver 9 in 2017, wide receiver 7 in 2018. He was the wide receiver 10 last season before injury in weeks 1 through 7, even though he could barely get, you know, more than 5 or 6 targets per game in that run-first offense with Diggs. So, you know, it's after the big five wide receivers, I do think you can make cases for a lot of these other guys, your Galladay's goblins of the world. But, I mean, when you just look at who is – like, who are the most cemented wide receivers at the top of their team's pecking order? Adam Thielen should be in anyone's top six.
I know Adam is firmly with you, and I'm with you too there, Ian, because I don't think that people really understand that the Vikings are going to throw the ball more this year. Their secondary, outside of their safety play, has a chance to be atrocious. Like, they are leaning. They gutted their secondary yesterday. They are leaning on rookies as far as their starting corners. Their defensive line, Pierce opted out, and they also have some holes there that the guys that they didn't bring back. So I'm with you. I think the Vikings defense is going to take a step back. I think the Vikings throw the ball, and Thielen is the alpha there. Like, it is unquestioned.
Dude, he's my wide receiver 7. I started laughing, if you heard me, when Ian was talking about how people are anointing Adam Thielen as an injury risk all of a sudden after he got hurt for like the first time of his real relevance of as a fantasy receiver, and people are like, oh, he's gonna be 30 and he got hurt last year, he's gonna get hurt again this year. It's just a lock. Like, it's not how it works all the time, and there aren't many receivers that are probably locked into 150 targets, and Adam Thielen's one of them. And yeah, I mean, they're secondary, they're gonna be relying on Jeff Gladney, Cameron Dantzler, they're both rookies, Mike Hughes, and then yeah, they look, their safeties are fantastic. But I just think, and there's also people worried about, like, Justin Jefferson, if he's going to play inside and take Thielen outside more. Like, Thielen's obviously better inside, most receivers are, but Thielen is still very, very strong playing outside. It's not like he can't play outside. So, yeah, he's my wide receiver 7. I've drafted him so many leagues. I've taken him, you know, the early third round, and I'm perfectly fine with it, and I'll continue to do it.
Yeah, I'm all in, man. So, Adam, what's your next bowl call here?
So I'm going to go to tight end. I've talked about a lot of tight ends I like. Hayden Hurst, you know, we both like Gesicki and Irv Smith. But I think there's a real path that Jonnu Smith could be a top five tight end this year. Now, obviously, you need the Titans to throw the ball more, which they're going to. I mean, last year they, you know, attempted 26.9 passes per game. It was the fewest in the NFL. It was also the fourth fewest pass attempts per game from an offense since 2013. Just teams, you know, their identity is to give the ball to Derrick Henry 25 times a game, but teams now, especially nowadays, they don't throw the ball little in a season. It's just not common. So the pass attempts are going to go up. Jonnu Smith, you know, started the season as the clear backup to Delanie Walker. Then Delanie missed most of the year, but now he's going into the offseason knowing he's the number one tight end. He's probably the number two passing option in this offense behind AJ Brown. And I just think there's a lot of upside. I mean, he's maybe the second best tight end after the catch behind George Kittle. They gave him a lot of screens, like 20% of his targets came off screens. I think they're going to continue to do that. I just love the player. I know that Tennessee's passing volume isn't going to be, you know, top five or anything, but if they just get up to, you know, close to league average or around league average, Jonnu Smith could get 100 targets, being the number two option in an offense that's really concentrated. I mean, we know they should start to give Derrick Henry a couple screens a game because that's like the most, you know, difficult thing to stop him running downhill with blockers in front of him. But we don't expect him to take a huge jump in passing work. So it's really just going to be AJ Brown, Jonnu Smith, and some Corey Davis. So I think Jonnu Smith is one of my favorite tight ends to take that's going after like the top 12. I think there's serious upside there, especially because he's just really, really athletic, really explosive, and he's going to have the entire season as the full-time tight end.
Yeah, man, let's get Jonnu some rush attempts too. Why not that?
Yeah, they give him some. Let's get it.
Toss from the I formation. Dude just is shedding tacklers. He's such a beast. PFF database back to 2010. I mean, the only guy averaging more yards after the catch per reception than Jonnu is George freaking Kittle. Look, the way I've been approaching tight end all offseason is if I can get, you know, one of Kittle, Kelsey, Andrews, great. And if not, I'm happy to take Jonnu, you know, take Herndon. I'm not going to be reaching for the Hayden Hurst or Tyler Higbee's of the world because I think their questions, you know, and their potential floor is pretty much the same as these other guys. So, you know, prioritizing these later round tight ends like Herndon, like Jonnu, even a Hockenson where we have seen them perform at a high level, you know, in real life, in real competitive NFL games, definitely could be an edge. And one of them is going to blow up, whether it's Jonnu, whoever that might be, remains to be seen. But, you know, it's not costing you. I don't think anyone's going to look back at their draft in December and say, man, if I just hadn't have taken Jonnu Smith in round 13, I mean, look at where I could be. So it's a pretty low risk move with definitely plenty of reward.
Yeah, I love Jonnu Smith. All we need is the targets because like Ian's talking about, you just put the ball in his hand, and nobody can tackle this dude. He is ridiculous after the catch. So for my next bowl call, I'm going to head back west. I think Cooper Kupp can be a top three wide receiver this year. And for anybody that double takes on that, we've already seen it. We've already seen it. Last year, weeks 1 through 8, before the Rams were decimated, if you want to talk here about what happened to their offensive line, check out yesterday's episode with J.J. Zacharyson. I broke down every single thing that that happened throughout the season as far as injuries that cascaded for the Rams on their offensive line. But Cooper Kupp, he started out the year in a very Adam Thielen-esque way. He was just manhandling teams. Weeks 1 through 8, he rattled off 5 100-yard games in those first 8 games. Now, after they totally revamped it when they went 12 heavy, I think they go back to 3 wide sets this year because that is exactly what they were doing to begin the year before their offensive line woes. And when they did that, Cooper Kupp just bossed people. You look at last year. I mean, they were running 3 wide sets in the first 8 weeks. They were at 80%. That was super comparable to the year before when they were at 89%. So I think they go back there. We know that Cooper Kupp, when they get into the red zone, that is where Jared Goff's eyes go. Over his last 24 games, he has 28 red zone targets. So this is not me shading Bob Woods. I love Robert Woods, but he does not have the ceiling that Cooper Kupp does. Cooper Kupp will get targets. He runs out of the slot. He has the red zone role. We've already seen it over a half a season that he can do this and perform. Another year off the ACL, I think Cooper Kupp is going to smash this year.
I'm going to disagree with you on that one. I have Kupp as my wide receiver 24. I do, you know, we've seen since 2010 an average of 4.3 teammates per year, both finished as top 24 wide receivers. So I think the Rams will get there, but I think the target projection for him and Woods should be about the same. And Woods, you're getting a nice little extra, you know, 15 to 20 rush attempts per season. And yeah, I mean, Kupp was awesome during the first half of last year, but I mean, it's concerning. And Kupp, as you know, he had that play against the Saints where he broke 30 tackles. I mean, the guy's obviously an awesome talent, but I do get worried when I hear, you know, smart people like Matt Harmon, you know, Reception Perception, you know, one of the better wide receiver talent evaluators in the industry, just talking about how, you know, Kupp's never been above the 12th percentile in success rate against man coverage. And I feel like he is the guy that, you know, has kind of gotten the most out of Sean McVay, you know, being a wizard for these first few years. But I have my doubts if that's going to continue into 2020. And, you know, I would feel a lot better about the offensive line getting back on track if they had done literally anything other than adding a seventh round pick to the equation. I mean, there's something to be said for continuity, but when you're continuing a bad and banged up unit, I don't know, man. I feel like with Kupp, people are way more willing to take that best case scenario and project it to 2020. Whereas we got someone like Devontae Parker, who I think is probably a better overall wide receiver than Kupp. And, you know, he had opposite splits where he was the wide receiver two in the second half of the season, wide receiver whatever in the first half. And we're kind of, you know, it seems kind of picky choosy to me about what a split we want to go off of. So while Kupp, you know, we've seen him do it, but I think the best days from the Rams offense are in the rearview mirror.
Man, I'm buying back in, Ian. Like, I think Kupp is also a little bit underrated as an outside receiver, and I absolutely respect all of Matt all Harmon's work with reception perception. It's just, if you look at Kupp when he's been used on the outside over the last two seasons, or at least so 2017, 2019, he had a 75% and 59% catch rates. He had QBRs of 141, 139, 102, and 104. So I'll disagree a little bit there. And I mean, even last year versus man coverage, he caught 19 of his 28 targets and he had a 150 QBR. So I'll disagree a little bit there. I think that Kupp can win on the outside a little bit better than something.
And Kupp, like, he was quote unquote bad in the down the stretch last year. He scored in like every game still. So that, like, he does have that. I'm really interested to see what their touchdowns are going to be between Kupp and Robert Woods. Kupp has been the better touchdown scorer, but Robert Woods was just insanely unlucky. I mean, I looked at on Pro Football Reference, there have been 60 instances where a receiver has seen at least 135 targets, which is what Woods at least saw. I think he saw like 139 last year. 60 instances, their average touchdowns per season was 7.6, and Robert Woods scored two receiving touchdowns. So super unlucky in that department. So, yeah, I'm interested. I prefer Woods just because I think he's the better just overall player. And I think, like Ian said, he's going to get the rushing. But yeah, I mean, Cooper Kupp's rapport with Jared Goff in the red zone has been a thing, you know, since they both entered the league.
All right, Ian, what is your final fire take here?
I am betting on the Lions to win the NFC North. And I saw a pretty funny tweet from Mina Kimes last week where it was like, me and all the other analysts picking the Lions to win the NFC North, there's a bunch of like Joker clowns like dancing down the elevator. So certainly in a position here to be burned. You know, I'm well aware of Coach Matt Patricia, you know, some of the issues that, you know, we've seen him do game planning. The defense, it's one of these situations where they were really bad last year. You know, they've thrown more pieces at it, particularly a ton of just Patriots cast-offs, just kind of hoping they regress, you know, to even league average level. But, man, this offense was humming with Stafford under center. Best season of his career in almost any metric. League-high deep ball rate first year with Daryl Bovell. I mean, hey, guys, it's crazy when you let one of the, you know, the league's strongest arm quarterbacks do something other than devote, you know, 200 targets per year to Theo Riddick and Golden Tate. Nothing against those guys, but Stafford should have been throwing downfield a long time ago. And I mean, we saw what happened from it. And even in that first eight games, I mean, they went 3-4-1, but that was a little bit deceiving, man. I mean, that Cardinals game obviously could have gone either way, but I mean, that super close 4-point loss to the Chiefs that had, you know, 99-yard fumble returns going back the other way, just complete robbery against the Packers. I mean, this was a situation. I get it. A win is a win is a win, but I mean, they could have been 5-3, 6-2, and Stafford, you know, in the thick of the MVP hunt before he went down. So it's a situation where I think the offense is going to be great. Defense could just, you know, from natural progression, not be one of the worst units in the league again. And you look at the rest of the division, I mean, Bears, whether it's Foles or Trubisky, I think they're going to be the worst QB in the division by a good amount. The Packers were an 8-18 by pretty much any efficiency metric last year. I mean, I doubt they can go 9-1 and one score games again. And the Vikings, you know, credit to Mike Zimmer for always having a great defense. He said he doesn't expect that to change this year, but that's going to be tested. I mean, they have all sorts of talent to replace all over the defense. And, you know, no digs, you know, some of those things we talked about with Dylan a few minutes ago. I mean, I think they'll have some guys put up numbers, but I also don't expect them to be the same juggernaut. So I just think the NFC North is wide open. And the Lions, you know, you look at the betting markets, they're still really being treated as an afterthought. And I think it's much more a much closer race than the betting markets are indicating right now.
The Lions have the least talked about group of offensive skill players in the league. Like, Kenny Galladay, Marvin Jones is one of the best tandems. Amendola is a really reliable slot guy. And then you add what TJ Hockenson should be able to improve on, of course, if he's healthy with the ankle, and DeAndre Swift and Kerryon Johnson, plus how good Stafford was before he got hurt. I like it. I like it a lot.
I really like it because, I mean, the Lions were, I mean, they were a top 10 offense last year. They were 7th in points per game with Stafford under center. I think that they just pick up where they left off. Like, what has changed there besides getting a running back? Like, if they have the rushing component of their offense as well, because Kerryon, we know that he can't stay healthy. RIP, I love Kerryon Johnson. But if we do get that also as an add-on to this offense, I think this offense could will this team to 9 wins. And if that happens, yeah, I'm totally with you. And, like, they could win the NFC North this year of looking at all the rest of the teams, which is simply 9 wins, and coast into the playoffs.
I'm staying at tight end. I don't like that I'm saying this because I love the player, and he was awesome last year. But there is a real path for Darren Waller to be outside the top 12 at tight end. Now, he's going a lot of the times as the tight end 5. I just worry about the fact that he didn't have a lot of red zone usage. He had 4 targets from inside the 10. They like Foster Moreau down there. They add Jason Witten for whatever reason. Now you also add a ton of other weapons with Bryan Edwards and Henry Ruggs and Lynn Bowden. And Darren Waller was not nearly as productive when Hunter Renfrow was healthy last year because they both operate the same part of the field. That's what this Raiders offense is going to be. It's a lot of short passing, high percentage targets for Derek Carr to throw to because he's not taking shots. I mean, he'd be more inclined to throw the ball away on fourth down, clearly, as we've seen. But I just think the touchdowns weren't there last year, despite him having one of the highest target shares among. Like, he was put into a perfect situation because they had Tyra Williams, who they brought in, who missed a lot of the year. Renfrow missed a lot of time. Like, he was the only guy there to catch passes. Now he's not, and he already wasn't getting touchdowns. So I'm worried about Darren Waller. I will not be drafting him, especially because he's going as that tight end 5 or 6. I think Darren Waller will be outside the top 12 at tight end at the end of the year.
It seems like a little recency bias just with, you know, how good Waller was last year and then Jared Cook in 2018. I mean, those are 2 top 5 PPR tight ends back-to-back, but that's not always been what Gruden's been about. I mean, we saw from 2002, 2008 with the Bucs. I mean, Joey Galloway, Keyshawn Johnson, Keenan McCardell, Antonio Bryant, Michael Clayton, all these guys are getting fed 120-plus targets, and look what the Raiders did in the draft with Ruggs, Edwards, and Bowden. I mean, clearly, they weren't happy with Waller being the centerpiece of this passing game. And yeah, people want to say Witten doesn't matter. I don't think Witten would have, if he didn't have some sort of, you know, expectation to have a decent role. I mean, I don't expect him to play 90% of snaps or anything like that. I mean, Waller's too good to sit on the sideline, but at a minimum, projecting, you know, triple-digit targets for him seems a little bit reckless. You know, you got Moreau balling as a backup as well. There's just a whole lot of guys there, and, you know, what can Derek Carr keep the job? I don't know, man. They just gave 2 years, $18 million to Mariota. That's a lot of money to give a pure backup, and, you know, we got to be careful making fun of Derek Carr with the, you know, throwing away on fourth down. Otherwise, he'll block you guys on Twitter like he did me. I just think it's a situation where, you know, we saw these past 2 years and it looks like it's an offense that just breeds these fantasy friendly tight ends. But yeah, the 2020 roster position group is much different. And I think Gruden wants to get back to throwing the speedier wide receivers, which is exactly what the draft is telling us. So yeah, I have Waller, I mean, ranked tight end 9, but as I was saying before, I mean, I don't know if I've drafted him a single time this year because pretty much tight end 4 through like tight end 10, 11, even I'm just letting someone else reach on those guys.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm with you. Like, I think that Waller is being drafted right now. Like, I've not selected him in best ball anywhere at all because I think he's being drafted at his ceiling. I mean, he's going tight end 5, tight end 6 in most different formats, and I just can't do it because of all the reasons you listed, Ian and Adam. Like, I don't think that he was basically the only show in town, except for when the IT specialist Hunter Renfrow was actually healthy and involved in the offense down the stretch. He even cannibalized. So you're going to add in better, speedier, more draft equity tied to these guys, other playmakers into this offense. And people are like, eh, Waller's going to ball out. It's going to do it. It's just going to happen. It's going to happen, guys. And I'm like, I don't know if it's going to happen. Like, we saw last year, his touchdown equity wasn't there. If you have other guys that are going to eat into his target share as well, I can definitively see him falling outside the top 12 because – the other thing that needs to be said here, that entire late round tight end grouping, if any of those guys just absolutely just take the reins and they have great seasons, that can push Waller outside the top 12 as well. Conclude this whole entire episode with something I think that people are going to really hate, and I'm curious if Ian's going to push back on me here, is that I think that in his range of outcomes, Dak Prescott could finish as the top overall quarterback in fantasy this year. And people are going to hate that because of Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson are cemented firmly atop people's rankings. And I get it. I understand it. But for all the things we were walking into last season, and people are talking about Mahomes regressing, and people are talking about Lamar doing the same, nobody believed that Mahomes could have regressed last year, and yet it happened. Lamar is still going to run this year. I will not, absolutely will not fight anybody on that. But can we say his passing touchdown percentage does not come down? Yes. And if that happens, that takes some of that just God mode ceiling away from him. And people are going to say, okay, well, if those two things happen and Mahomes doesn't ball out and Lamar doesn't repeat last year, how can Dak get to that point? Because we haven't seen that out of Dak. Like, he's been, people are ranking him aggressively. Like, I have him as my QB3, but in his range of outcomes, I think he could be the QB1 because we haven't seen out of Dak Prescott yet an outlier season as far as touchdown passing percentage. If you look down his resume, it's been, he's had rushing touchdowns that have helped pad that floor, but his touchdown passing percentage has been 5, 4.5, 4.2, 5. These are not even like great numbers as far as from a touchdown passing percentage perspective. And with McCarthy in town, Kellen Moore freed from the shackles of Jason Garrett this year, I think this offense can absolutely take off. You add in the talent of CeeDee Lamb running out of the slot, who is going to be more explosive after the catch than Randall Cobb was last year. We don't have dad runner Jason Witten here. We now have Blake Jarwin running down the seam. Much well as if Dak Prescott, you look at how unlucky he's been over the last 2 years in the red zone. He's been 31st in red zone completion percentage over the last two seasons. McCarthy is going to throw it when they get inside the 20 more, because we've seen over 2016 to 2018, the last 3 years for the Packers, he's never ranked outside the top 11 in passing rates inside the 20. And the Cowboys last year, they were 29th. So you want to talk about skill players. Hell, I haven't even talked about Dak Prescott. Last year was the first year he didn't have 6 rushing touchdowns. So there's so many outs for Prescott this year that he can access this immense, immense ceiling inside of this offense, whether it's passing touchdowns, rushing touchdowns, passing volume, better players around him, all of these things, and the stars could align. Dak Prescott could walk out of the year as the QB1 in fantasy, and everybody's just spinning their heads saying, oh my God, why didn't I draft him in the 6th, 7th round?
I have bad news for you. I don't think this is all that bold. I really don't.
People will, man. People are totally,
I get it,
set and forget that, like, Lamar and Mahomes are at the top.
I think it's relatively bold. Like, I think it's a lukewarm take. How about that?
Am I lukewarm here?
I mean, the consensus QB3, but yeah, no one's putting him in the QB1 right tier with Lamar and Mahomes. So I'll give you that. I think everything you said about the offense makes sense. And I mean, the only piece they're missing that you didn't touch on is Travis Frederick, which, you know, I don't think he was quite the same caliber player in 2019 coming back from that weird disease he had to deal with. And then, you know, obviously he retired. So there's probably something to do with that was his performance. So, you know, having Joe Looney there who started every game in 2018 and they've devoted multiple, you know, higher end draft picks to the center position. I think the offensive line is still going to be, you know, a top 5 unit in the league. And then, as you said, man, CD and Jarwin are going to help things there. And the big thing is, like, look, the Ravens defense was nasty last year. They've added Calais Campbell. I mean, they're going to be great. they've already talked about, you know, wanting to run Lamar at least a little bit less. I think the Chiefs, you know, are more complete than ever on defense as well. I mean, we're just looking, the Chiefs and Ravens, I think, are much better overall teams, and we could see them, you know, in these game scripts where Mahomes and Lamar don't have to carry this team in a manner that Dak most likely will, because, I mean, this Cowboys defense, we'll see if they're, some of their DNs can, like, stay unsuspended for a bit, but, man, it's just looking pretty soft out there. They didn't come even close to replacing Byron Jones. You know, it's been, you know, year, what, 10 or 15 that we wanted them to add like a legit difference maker at safety, and that still hasn't happened. Apparently they're kind of out of the running for Earl Thomas. You know, they're going to need Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch to get back to 2018 levels. And I know Vander Esch was playing well last year before he got hurt, but either way, this is, you know, not even a comparable, I think, defense to some of these other squads we're looking at. And because of that, we're going to see Dak, you know, in this offense just trying to score 35 plus per game. So yeah, man, potential positive regression and touchdown rate. I mean, it wouldn't be shocking to see Dak have one of these, you know, Cam Newton-esque seasons where he's able to score, you know, 10 plus rushing touchdowns along with 30 passing scores. And yeah, that's going to give him, you know, that overall QB1 in his range of outcomes. So yeah, I mean, I've always been more of a late round QB guy, but when I have been, you know, rostering someone in drafts this year, it's almost always been Dak Prescott, kind of around that, you know, 6 through 8 rounds, like you were saying.
Yeah, I just love Dak this year. And to your point, Ian, about their defense, McCarthy over the last few years when he was in Green Bay never dipped below a 68% passing rate whenever they were trailing. Dallas last year was at 62%. So we're talking about an even higher floor for his passing attempts. I just think Dak is going to smash. I think there's so many different outs that he could surpass Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson this year. And I threw this in here because I threw it out on Twitter that I think that Dak Prescott – could have that in his range of outcomes. And, of course, all the trolls come at me. Ah, you're crazy. And I'm like, dude, y'all have not really looked at this. Like, this dude has done all the things he's done to this point and even balled out last year and never had this ridiculous type of season like Watson, like Mahomes, like Lamar, where he's just gone God mode in the touchdown department. That happens, and all of the other things happen. He can smash this year.
They, like you mentioned, he didn't have the 6 rushing touchdowns last year. They have a lot of plays drawn up for Dak inside the 5, and it's really tough to stop. So,
all right, man, this was an awesome episode. We spit the fire. We got all of our takes out into the stratosphere. So, Ian, thank you so much for coming on. What are you working on at PFF? What do you got going on, man?
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me, dude. This is a lot of fun. Follow me on Twitter at iHartitz, IHARTITZ. I have all my articles and podcasts going up there almost daily basis. Have my top 300 coming out on Friday, so make sure you all check that out at home before your maybe fantasy drafts this weekend. And as always, check out the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Episodes Tuesday, Thursday. I've had a bunch of team previews going out in between then. So thanks again, guys.
So Adam and I are going to be back one more episode this week, and then we'll be back in your ears for 3 as we march towards the season. So for Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.